We have a trade to announce, Jeff Merrick.
Our first big trade of the year. Oh, boy, I'm giddy. Giddy with excitement.
Are you?
Well, and it's not Kyle Brodziak, who I thought was going to be the first person traded this year.
Right. No, you lost that pool. Instead,
totally.
It is the amazingly titanic, can you believe both of these guys are still in the league, Travis Moen for Sergei Gonchar trade. The Canadiens acquiring 40-year-old Sergei Gonchar in a trade for Travis Moen. Now, both of these guys have been on the block for most of the year. In fact, Darren Drager reports through his contact Pat Brisson, no doubt, that CAA has been trying to orchestrate a trade for Gonchar out of Dallas for quite some time, several months, in fact. And yeah. Moen's been on the block for at least the last 2 months,
well,
probably longer
on.
For the,
but
Montreal.
The Gonchar, that's not exactly news. Everybody talked about that going back to last summer.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and that was out there. I think even Mike Hyker wrote about that.
Well, listen, I mean, obviously you have to understand that Drager broke that now. And just because you work for Sportsnet doesn't mean you have to snark about what a great reporter he is.
I'm not snarking about it. I'm just saying that this is kind of common knowledge. All summer long, the Dallas Stars were trying to relieve themselves of the burden of Sergei Gonchar.
But he's saying that the agency is the one who helped orchestrate this trade to Montreal, where Gonchar is, of course, reunited. Right. He has a no-trade clause that went from January 2015 to the trade deadline 2015. That's what Gonchar's no-trade clause was, so it hasn't kicked in yet. Mm-hmm. So he's saying that the agents helped orchestrate the trade, which reunites him with, of course, Michel Therrien. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, that's good. Well, here, let me throw some numbers at you. 28th in the NHL at 7.7%, Habs power play. Enter Sergei Gonchar.
Yep.
The only question now is who's the next Russian defenseman the Montreal Canadiens go for? Now that they have Alexei Emelin, Sergei Gonchar, Andrei Markov. Is Vyacheslav Petusov still, is he?
Well, he was about 75 years old when he came into the league. So I'm not quite sure how old he is now, but
Okay.
So do you think Gonchar could do that? Do you think Gonchar is a dependable point man to help the power play?
I can't see why else he's been brought in. Can you?
No.
I know Andrei Markov's the premier left-hand shot on the team, but now they have another left-hand shot, I guess, for second unit power play. Like, listen, I'm convinced he's brought in for one reason and one reason alone. Help that power play. Now, mind you, if you have a look at the standings, this is completely Montreal where the sky is falling, everything's terrible. They're 10-4-1, good for 21 points after 15 games. We're on a two-game winning streak. Time to waive Rene Bork and time to bring in Sergei Gonchar because our power play is awful.
Yeah.
They're -5 in the goal differential. I get that, but it's not as if they are bottoming out. But the thing about Montreal is you can see management admitting where the weaknesses are before they are evident to everybody else, right? Normally teams will let's surf on this for a while. We're cool. Let's not rush into any decisions. You wait until the team's flirting with losing a playoff spot, and then you actually do something. I think Montreal management knows that in some ways that record is a pretty thin veil, and they haven't played solid hockey all season long, and they want to correct that as soon as possible. And by getting rid of Travis Moen, I wonder if that's the not-so-subtle message to Michel Therrien that management wants to have a better look at Jiří Sakac.
Yeah, and I also think it's sort of a message to Michel Therrien that we're going to dictate player personnel and not you. He liked the times playing Moen a little bit, you know what I mean? So I think that it's a message-sending trade in a number of ways to the players and to the coach. But I'm not a fan of power play specialists, be honest with you. I'm really not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me a little bit nervous when they, like, for example, I know he's kind of your boy, but I'm not exactly a Michael Delzato fan.
I know that.
It makes me a little bit nervous that they would go and make this trade and acquire Gonchar, knowing that if he doesn't turn the power play around, if he doesn't do that one job that he was wanting to do,
I know what you mean.
You're left with a 40-year-old guy who probably by playoff time is going to be a pylon. What are you left with? With a bum ankle?
You're not wrong. If it doesn't work and it doesn't jumpstart the power play, then what do you have with Sergei Gonchar? You have Sergei Gonchar playing in a much more comfortable Eastern Conference. Pretty obvious that the West may have been a little too big and strong for Sergei Gonchar. Mm-hmm. You have, if you look down the left side of the Montreal Canadiens, you have Markov, Emelin, Nathan Beaulieu, and now you add Sergei Gonchar. I guess now the question is, and maybe the obvious answer is just the obvious answer, Jared Tenorti goes down for Sergei Gonchar. But I wonder what this means now for the ice time for Emelin and Beaulieu and how much 5-on-5 Gonchar gets. I don't know. The initial take is he's been brought in because the Habs know if you don't fix this power play ASAP, it's going to be trouble on the horizon because 5-on-5, this team hasn't played well.
Right.
Right. And what else are you going to do? It's a risk, but what else are you going to do?
Do you ever trust a deal like this when there's history between the player and the coach? Do you think in some cases the coach knows more than we do, or do you think in some cases the coach is simply a slave to nostalgia?
I don't know what the relationship was like between Gonchar and Michel Therrien. Like, sometimes it's obvious, and it's like, oh, yeah, it works, and these two guys get along and be a great situation, and the coach knows what he has in the player and has faith in him, et cetera, as opposed to, you know, a coach who doesn't know what the player is all about. I don't know what the relationship was like with Michel Therrien and Sergei Gonchar, so I can't really answer that question. I think it all depends on
the
situation.
The gang of people who drove him out of that job in favor of Dan Balvin?
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, there were plenty that had it with Michel Therrien. Although, I think to a person, that Pittsburgh Penguins team will probably admit that the lessons they learned under Michel Therrien, despite the fact they couldn't stand him by the end, helped them win a Stanley Cup because of what Michel right. Therrien taught them and what they instilled in them. But I can't speak in wide brush terms about, you know, player X having a relationship with coach Y and having coached him before and having played for him before. Much like I can't, you know, paint with a wide brush on the returning hometown hero. Oh, Joffrey Lupul from Fort Saskatchewan. He's going to be great in Edmonton. Sheldon Surrey. Oh, look, the local boy. He's going to be fantastic in Edmonton. It doesn't. Sometimes it does. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think you can. You can make the assertion that because a player is from one market, he is necessarily going to excel in that market. Same way, just because someone played for a coach doesn't necessarily mean he's going to excel for that coach again and ad infinitum. I don't think. What do you think? What do you think in this situation specifically?
I think it was a bad fit for him in Dallas at this point. There was no reason for Dallas to keep him around. I mean, Travis Moen ain't exactly a game changer. He may add a little bit of sandpaper and grit to the lineup. But, you know, you dump the cap hit now, and you keep a little bit of salary. I think a $400,000 was the number I saw being put out there. Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad deal. And basically, Gonchar was in Dallas for one reason, to be a Band-Aid on their blue line until the young guys are ready. So I guess they feel the young guys are ready, and they felt like doing a solid to a veteran guy and getting them out of there. It's not
or
a bad
you
deal.
See,
listen, I've seen a lot of people go absolutely batshit today about Gonchar joining that team. And I think that in your opening soliloquy here, you've given some reasons for hope, which is that the East-West transition is going to obviously benefit him. If he's bought in as a power play specialist, it certainly decreases the amount of pressure on the guy to perform. And maybe he becomes that. Maybe, you know, that's the role he can play well right now. Is there cause for concern? Yeah, I'd have a real cause for concern with a 40-year-old guy like him trying to play 5-on-5 deep into the playoffs. That's a big concern. Mm-hmm. But you maybe give the benefit of the doubt that Michel Therrien knows this guy well enough that you feel comfortable he adds a missing ingredient to that Habs team. Or you think Michel Therrien is completely incompetent and Sergei Gonchar is, you know, done. That's the other way to look at it, too.
Or part of this is you say to yourself, okay, what this does now for Michel Therrien is it frees up a spot for a longer look at Jiří Sikáč and Michael Bournival, who have, you know, greater long-term upsides, obviously, than Travis Moen has. And you know what? Maybe for Dallas, you're like, you know what? Someone's really going to kill Antoine Roussel. We better put some muscle around him.
Oh, I love Roussel.
I know you do.
It's fine. It's two teams that needed a little bit of a shakeup. I don't know how much of a shakeup this is for Dallas, but like we chronicled yesterday, they're really kind of in a bad spot right now.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing though about Montreal right now too. I mean, this is all of a sudden a general manager that's made, you know, two pretty frisky moves. You know, you've waived Rene Bork, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chronic underachiever. Every now and then he shows you the glimpses of what could be a great power forward in the game, only to vanish into the ethers. And now, there are times when Rene Bork.
No.
There are times when he looks fantastic, but then he turns into the sleepy giant. Ask Calgary, and now ask Montreal.
I think he's a bit of a stretch to say fantastic. It's been all right.
He'll put together a couple. I'm saying a couple of games. I'm not saying he puts together like 2 weeks where he's like, you know, Cam Neely coming over from Vancouver in that trade and popping 50 goals and running over everybody and beating up Shane Corson. No, not that. But there are moments where you say to yourself, man, if Rene Bork could only put this together consistently, he could really be a force in the NHL. So they've waived him. Now they got rid of Travis Moen. So it's two kind of sandpaperish guys they have out of the lineup. And now, mind you, they still have Brandon Prust available for service. Thank you very much. And Dale Weiss isn't exactly a shrinking violet. But I come back to the original point. Now it's more audition time for Yuri Sakach and Michel Bourneval. The question now becomes is, what does this mean for Nathan Beaulieu, who's another left-hand shot defenseman, first-round pick, St. John Sea Dog, is selling Pierre Maguire? What does that mean for him on the Montreal Canadiens blue line? Where do the Habs see him in his career arc if they're bringing in someone like Sergei Gonchar?
So you're saying it's a little bit of Band-Aid time for them too, eh?
I don't know. It might be. I don't know. I'm curious to see which defenseman gets the punt. Because, you know, on that third pairing, Tom Gilbert staying, who gets sent down? And maybe it's already happened and I've missed it and someone tweet at me if it's already happened. Is it Nathan Beaulieu or is it Jared Tenorti? Who's going down?
I think Tenorti got sent down. From what
did
I saw.
Did he get sent down? Well, there you go. Then the answer
is... I think he might have.
So then...
Unless somebody was just simply opining that could happen. And in case you were wondering with regard to the Montreal Canadiens and who is getting the preponderance of the power play time as far as defensemen go, that would be, so far this season, to nobody's surprise. I know it's going to shock you. Markov, 329. Subban, 344. And there isn't another defenseman who is getting more than 52 seconds that Tom Gilbert has gotten so far this season. So basically, you have two defensemen playing the power play point for this team.
Yeah. Now you have a second unit power play. If, as you point out, he's coming off a fractured ankle. If the ankle is okay.
I think it's fine. I mean, 40-year-olds heal pretty. Do 40-year-olds heal well, Jeff Merrick?
Yeah. If your initials are Daniel Alfredson, they do. But if you're anybody else, no, not so fast. I know I don't heal very quickly anymore.
Dorian G, what's this more likely leading to? Dallas doesn't have assets, won't pay for Myers, so a Petrie type. Gavin Wilkinson, Dallas probably is not done. I'd assume the Stars are trying to get a top four D-man in the near future, needed cap space. So the Dallas reaction to this trade seems to be that this is the first step to something else.
Could be. I could see shoes dropping on both sides.
I don't know. This seems like a move of finality maybe for Montreal. But Dallas, as far as cap space goes, they're up against it, man. That's a good. So if this is a cap clearing space for now, which they might be doing because obviously, you know, they're in a bad way right now in the standings.
Yeah.
It may kind of make sense from that. Hey, give Bergevin credit, man. He found a way. Someone gave him a warm body for Travis Moen. That's not easy.
Well, they also threw him, you know, $4.5 million of cap.
Are you told on?
Here, deal with this.
How dare you, sir? Are you insinuating that this move was made for the salary cap and not for player personnel purposes?
No. I'm saying he just absorbed $4.5 million of cap.
Coming up on the show today. Oh, finally. So who do you think won the trade, Jeff Merrick? Dallas.
Oh, instant analysis. It is Facebook culture. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Do you like the trade?
Hot
who wins, who loses? If the Habs power play if the Habs power play improved, the Habs win this trade. To me,
Dallas wins the trade. It opens up valuable cap space. I think Travis Moen could be an absolute spark plug in that lineup. Anyone who disagrees with this hot take, you're out of your mind. Get your gourd straight, sir, ma'am. Hot takes.
Very good. That's good. Some good hot
coming
takes
up.
Right there.
I'll tell you exactly why Sergei Gonchar will be a massive bust for the Montreal Canadiens after the break.
Here's an interesting thought. This just comes in from our Sportsnet research department. With Travis Moy heading to Dallas in the trade, every player that was brought in by Bob Gainey during the summer of 2009, remember that? Remember that overhaul? Every player brought in by Bob Gainey in 2009 are now gone.
That's crazy.
There are 9 Russian defensemen in the NHL. 3 are in Montreal. And when Gonchar was drafted in 92, his new teammates, Gallagher, Sakach, Bornival, Tenorti, and Beaulieu, were born. Yeah, another way to make me feel old.
All right. Coming up on the show today, Jeff Skinner. The question of the day today is, in fact, what do you think of the Gonchar trade? PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. Tweet at Jeff Merrick or at Wyshynski on the Twitters, or put it in the subreddit that we have, or just a Reddit. I don't even know what the hell the proper terminology is. We have a thing on Reddit you can go to.
Go to Reddit.
What do you think of the Gonchar trade? And with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Okay.
It's
been so long.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Well, right now they're into Spider-Man, but the old, like, 1970s Spider-Man that I watched. You watch all those on YouTube.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
She watches Spider-Man. I don't know if she gets it, but she also watches a show called Teen Titans, which is a very sort of, like, kids-oriented show that involves Robin and...
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Ah, yes. Spidey, Spidey, Spidey. I think Spidey's her favorite, Vivian.
Was mine. It was on my way. We took our dog to the vet today to have a couple of lumps and a couple of teeth removed. And that's all my 2.5-year-old wanted to talk about. Ah, he's fine. Although the only one to talk about was Spider-Man and how he has sticky hands. I said, yes, Brody. Spider-Man has sticky hands.
He does indeed have sticky hands. Mm-hmm. Mary Jane next door.
Oh, my.
Bellucci writes in, so like I like it for Dallas. Moen adds good size in their bottom six, and he's from Saskatchewan. Baltimore Berserk writes in about Gonchar. Who has to supply his walkers and Geritol? That will decide whether or it's fair or not.
Tough crowd.
Gavin Wilkinson again. Jordy Ben struggling stars of 3 rookie D-men just called up. Klingberg. Seabrook? Myers? No, well, you're not getting Seabrook. Unless Chicago wants to shoot itself in the foot like Boston by trading a defenseman for cap purposes.
I don't think it's
Tyler Myers is going to be the name that's floated out there all over the place. But again, it really depends on what Tim Murray sees. If Tim Murray sees that Tyler Myers is part of the solution and not the problem, he's staying in Buffalo. Because I think there's a market for him.
You think?
One of these guys.
Thanks.
Well, no. I say that because the contract is significant for Tyler Myers. Let's not lose sight of that.
Yeah,
a lot of teams that probably like Tyler Myers but don't like him at that price.
And
Buffalo's
team,
not taking money.
Every team out there, Every team out there is saying the exact same thing. Man, if only I had Tyler Myers, I could fix him. We've seen this countless times. We see it all the time with the Rangers, the classic reclamation project. Greg Wyshynski, our guest, is standing by.
All right. Speaking of people that we're happy to have, we are happy to have this man on the show, one of our favorite players in this National Hockey League. He is, of course, a former rookie sensation, now a wily veteran. He is Jeff Skinner of the Carolina Hurricanes, and he joins us now. Mr. Skinner, welcome to the Merrick Wyshynski podcast, sir. How are you today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You know, Greg kind of touched on something there, Jeff, a second ago. Does it feel, because we can all recall, you know, in that Taylor Tyler draft, you know, one of the great finds, the Carolina Hurricanes scooping you up at 7, and bingo, right away you're into the NHL. Does it feel, because it feels, I think, to a lot of people that you've been around since forever, but you're only 22 years old.
Yeah, it's weird. Coming in this year, I felt sort of a little bit older, telling everyone I'm going into my 5th year, but it goes by fast, I think, and still learning, so hopefully I can keep going for a few more years.
Now, Jeff, the first month of the season for the Carolina Hurricanes was not a good month. Were you confident during that stretch, though, that things could turn around pretty quickly for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think we ran into a little bit of adversity early in the year, and everything kind of snowballed, and we couldn't find our first win for a while, and I think the longer it went, the tougher it got on us. And then once we got that first win, I think we got some confidence, and we started to roll from there. So once you get that first one, it sort of eases the pressure a little bit off the team, and then we were able to string a few together, and hopefully we can keep the good thing going.
You know, the old cliche, Jeff, is I'm sure you've heard a million times, you can tell when a team is coming out of a slump when they lose games they should have won. And conversely, you know, when you're going into a slump, when you win games that you should. I go back a couple of weeks, a pair of games, the Winnipeg game and the Calgary game, to me seemed like the darkest days for the Carolina Hurricanes. And then a better effort against Edmonton and a really good effort against the Vancouver Canucks. And then you beat Arizona, and then you defeat the Stanley Cup champions. What changed between the Calgary game and that Edmonton game when you guys really first started, even though you lost the Edmonton and Vancouver games, it seemed as if at that point you guys really started to turn things around on the year?
Yeah, I think obviously that wasn't what we wanted to do. When we went to Calgary, we didn't have our best game. And I think we turned around the next night. I think that was pretty nice for us to play the next night in Edmonton and had a little bit of a better effort. And then going to that Vancouver game, we got Stalzy back, which was a big boost for us. And again, we just everything seemed to sort of go wrong. We couldn't find that bounce to get us to win. And then we sort of stuck with it. I think that's the big thing, is you got to be persistent and mentally strong. And as a team, I thought we did a good job of sticking with what we wanted to do, and it paid off for us in that Arizona game.
So what has Bill Peters brought to the table as your coach? I mean, anything demonstrably different that he's doing versus previous regime as far as strategy and stuff like that?
I think obviously anytime a new coach comes in, they have their own ideas, their own systems. And we implemented those in training camp. And I think he obviously is a smart hockey guy. He knows the game. He likes to sort of teach the game. I think he's really detailed, and it sort of rubbed off on our team. I think we're paying attention to details and playing hard hockey right now, so it's a nice feeling in the room right now.
Let's stick with Bill Peters here for a couple of seconds, because I'm fascinated with this guy. And you mentioned detail, and you know, I heard the stories about, I think it was after or before the LA game, where he's got the tape measure out and he's measuring where the boards are for line changes. And it wouldn't surprise me if that door somehow changes at some point this year from where it is underneath the blue line. I know Scotty Bowman used to practice line changes with the Montreal Canadiens significantly. And I can't think of a team other than yours that practices line changes as much. When was the last time, Jeff, you actually practiced line changes as much as you do with Bill Peters?
I can't really remember. I think obviously that's sort of something that he prides himself on, being detailed, and that's one of those little details of the game that if you can pick up an inch or a step off the bench, then it allows you to create more space and time out there for yourself. So it's sort of I think who he is as a coach is to sort of look at all those little details that sometimes are overlooked, and I think the team benefits from that.
Jeff Skinner, Jeff Merrick and I are frankly tired of you getting concussions. We want you to be healthy. we want you to be one of the best young players in this league. It's scary times, man. It's happened to you more than a few times in your career. Have you at all had to change your game? Like, have you given any thoughts to not going to certain areas of the ice now? Other players have talked about that openly, that have gone through this concussion thing like you have. Like, has it affected your game at all?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that as you grow older, I think anytime you go through the league, you play more years and you become more mature as a person, a player. You learn different things and pick up different tips. And I think that I have sort of changed the way. I think that there's certain risks you can take on the ice and certain areas of the ice where you don't really have to take those risks, and certain times of the game where you don't have to sort of put yourself in a vulnerable position. I think as you grow older and as you mature, I think that you sort of learn those areas and those situations a little bit better. So I think that over the last couple of few years, I think that I've done a better job of I think being more aware of those kinds of things. I think obviously no one wants to get hurt, but it's a physical game, and sometimes injuries happen. But I think that as I grow older, I think you should learn little different ways to avoid them as best you can.
You know, speaking
Jeff,
of,
I'm sorry. As a follow-up on that one, like, have your thoughts about player safety changed since you were a rookie? Now that you've gone through this and had a few concussions, like, have you been maybe a bit more thinking that the NHL needs to be more vigilant about headshots, maybe longer suspension, stuff like that? Or do you think that they're doing a pretty good job insofar as player safety when it comes to concussions?
Yeah, I think the league does a good job. I think that they obviously people are more aware of it now than they have been in the past. I think that medical staff does a better job of making sure things are taken care of. And I don't think that you like to think as a player that nobody's out there trying to hurt people. I think that everyone's out there trying to have a career, and they don't want to really end anyone else's or hurt someone else. So, but I think that the league has done a great job of taking the steps to improving the safety of the game and the handling of injuries and concussions specifically.
First of all, Jeff, we should have congratulated you off the top. Congratulations on goal number 100 in the NHL. That is a fantastic achievement and looks fine on your resume. Getting back to the nature of the game right now, you know, one of the great performances of recent note in the OHL was your performance in your draft year in 2010, playing with the Kitchener Rangers. That year ultimately ended against the Windsor Spitfires, but nonetheless, you were, you know, Jeff, at times a one-man wrecking crew, and you weren't the biggest guy on the ice either by any stretch of the imagination. You were probably the fastest and the most aggressive and the hungriest from either team, either Kitchener or Windsor. But what did you... Because it seemed as if, you know, like I mentioned, you're like a bowling ball out there, and you didn't matter whether you were the ball or you were the pin. You were going to score goals, and you were going to fill the net. What did you take from that experience into the NHL and say, okay, I could do this in junior, but I can't do this in the NHL?
Yeah, I think that anytime you sort of make a step like that from junior to the NHL or to pro hockey in general, there's always going to be an adjustment just because of the fact that guys are bigger, guys are faster and stronger, and there's not as much time and space out there as there is in to the lower levels growing up to make plays out there. So I think that anytime you move up, there's adjustments. You try to make them as fast as you can and as smooth as you can, and try and learn the game as fast as you can so that you can sort of adjust with a different pace or speed of the game.
All right, Jeff, I have three lightning round questions about Raleigh for you. Because I'm curious about what life is like for you in Raleigh, because you've been there for a bit. Question number one, have you been to a NASCAR race?
No, I haven't. I have to, though. It's big here, but I haven't been to one yet.
Question two, have you met Cam Newton?
Nope. No, I haven't. No, they're in Charlotte, so it's a couple hours away, but no, I haven't met him.
I like your geographic answer for that, by the way. It's a very good yeah. It's chosen to know the state. And the third one, and I'm genuinely curious about this. So obviously you're a professional athlete. Your body is a well-oiled machine. It's a fine-tuned machine, the whole thing. You have to be careful about what you put inside your body. Are you a fan of Carolina barbecue?
Yeah. It's pretty good. I think that I'm not much of a barbecue sort of fan overall, but I think that I set the bar pretty high when I have a barbecue from Carolina. Obviously, it's pretty good, pretty far up there in the on the scale of barbecue. So I've had it not too much, but it's pretty good.
Well, you don't want to have too much of it. Yes, I mean you will not be able to skate well if you have too much.
No.
It'll just be weighted down.
Indeed. Hey, you know what, though? And this is the last one for me, Jeff, and thanks for your time and continued success in the NHL in the season under Bill Peters. A lot of the initial stories when you joined the NHL, speaking of skating, was about the figure skating background that you had. Do you feel in some ways vindicated now that here we are, you know, 5 years later, And a lot of younger hockey players, whether it's just, you know, getting a figure skating instructor to help them with edge work, or whether it's the Maple Leafs with Barbara Underhill, a former professional figure skater, as their figure skating coach, do you somehow feel vindicated in that, you know what, in a lot of ways, even though figure skating has made its way into the NHL at certain points, now when you say a hockey player is getting figure skating instruction, nobody snickers anymore. Do you feel a certain vindication about that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I think that it wasn't sort of how I looked at it growing up. I think that my parents just put me in it, and I thought it was fun. And it sort of, on the side, helped my hockey, I think, as I was growing up and developing. It helped me as a skater on the hockey side. So I do remember taking a couple little trips growing up about it, but it never seemed to bother me too much. But it is pretty cool seeing young guys and hearing about young hockey players now taking lessons or spending time figure skating, because it's sort of something that I was fortunate enough to do, and maybe cause a little bit more stress on parents and having to take people to the rink a little bit more, but it's something that definitely benefited me. So I'm pretty grateful for my parents to put me through that.
It's so funny because I've got a friend of mine. I just live a little bit north of where you grew up. I'm just in Stouffville on the border with Uxbridge. And a good friend of mine now, his kid's 14 years old, and now he just got a figure skating instructor to help him work on his edges, and it's $200 an hour. So on behalf of my friend Bob, thanks, Jeff, for starting this revolution in the NHL. It's not going to cost him upward of $800 a month for his kid. So there you go, Skinner. Well done.
It's my parents' fault. I think they were crazy enough to do it, so...
That's awesome.
Jeff Skinner, thank you for joining us. Continued success to the Carolina Hurricanes in that wacky Metropolitan Division. And we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Skinner, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
A former figure skater.
It's true. I'm surprised. I mean, Lane McDonald married a figure skater. I'm surprised that it's taken. Oh, listen, man. We've seen, I mean, hockey moves, like the minds of hockey. This is with all due respect. As far as innovation or changing things or looking at things in a new way. Like, remember the grief that Mike Gillis got about bringing in, like, sleep experts? Like, oh, here comes the hippie bringing in a sleep expert. Oh, waka waka. Just have a couple of beers and take a couple of Advil and fall asleep on the plane. That's how you do it. Like, the NHL moves so slowly. Like, I find the sport that is most resistant to change. It is the most conservative sport going. And I remember when Skinner came in, Wish, you were right there with the stories as well. Like, you remember it. Here comes the figure skater playing hockey. Waka, waka, waka. Right?
Yeah.
But now, if you look at all the kids, like, all these kids that are growing up now, like, any advantage you can get. Like, you watch Skinner skate. It's amazing. He's a great skater. Is he the biggest guy out there? Nope. Does he get thumped? Yeah, every now and then he gets caught. Sure, he's not the biggest guy out there. But his skating has kept him, with all due respect to the concussions that you brought up, a lot safer than he would have if he wasn't able to move like that. And I think a lot of kids are looking at that and saying, I need to be able to work, you know, I need to work all my edges here. And if that means getting a figure skating instructor to do so, so be it. I think
I don't understand why people...
Two things help here as far as, you know, the influence of the NHL and figure skating. Two things help. One, Jeff Skinner. And the other was the old CBC show Battle of the Blades that had NHL is actually doing figure skating. I think those are the two things when everyone said, you know what, it's okay to do this.
I still don't understand why it was a big deal that he was a figure skater. I mean, you would figure that would be commonplace considering how many years have gone by since the first Europeans played in the league. I mean, all they do is pirouette.
In the corner where they don't get hit, right?
There's Tuomo again going with a double axle instead of playing going to the corner for the puck.
Yeah. The triple outs. There's the, very good, very good.
All right, listen, it's time for a segment we like to call Jeff Provides Needles for Your Balloons on a classic goal.
No. Are we talking about Seth Griffith? Is that what we're going to do?
Seth Griffith scored a no-look between-the-legs goal last night for the Boston Bruins. Now, Jeff and I have not discussed this goal yet in any sort of way on the phone or otherwise. If you recall last week, Jeff Merrick grabbed his torch and the battle flag and led the anti-Tarasenko brigade down the streets of Broadway, of New York City, towards MSG to tell everybody tales of the Hartford Wolfpack that gave up that goal to Tarasenko. what are your thoughts now, sir, on this between the legs, ass to the goalie tally that Griffith had against Corey Schneider last night?
So if we look back, and let's just focus in here on the New Jersey Devils for sake of our
gather round.
So the last
children.
Time, gather around, ladies and gentlemen. Uncle Jeffy is going to tell you a story here. Well, throw another log on that fire, will you, Timmy? And get Grandpa another cup of hot chocolate, will you? I appreciate that. And someone rub Grandpa's feet. He's very tired and very sore after a long day. The last time Tarasenko danced the New Jersey Devils, or someone danced the New Jersey Devils, it was Vladimir Tarasenko, the St. Louis Blues. And as we documented on the podcast last week, the players involved were... Correct me if I'm wrong here, Greg Wyshynski, as you do your own internal audit. Michael Ryder, Adam Larson, Damon Severson, and Corey Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's right.
Uh-huh. Not exactly a murderer's row, but that's okay. Well, I would still maintain a better combination than Dylan McElrath, Mike Koska, Tanner Glass, and Rick Nash, and Cam Talbot. Okay? That was the Ranger dance.
Right.
So, we go to last night, and...
Oh, yeah.
The big goal by Seth Griffith, behind the back, between the legs.
If I, for one moment, may opine about this goal, the single most unintentionally hilarious thing I've heard in hockey maybe this season was the call of this goal from our good friend Jack Edwards and our also friend Andy Brickley. At one point during the goal call last night, Jack Edwards literally said, "An impossible goal for Seth Griffith!" About 20 seconds later, you hear Brickley go, "Hey, Schneider should have had it."
You know, when you have a look at the replay, what's Corey Schneider doing there?
It's like Jack is building the statue outside of the TD Garden, and Brick's like, it's kind of soft.
You know what? And somewhere, Rick Middleton quietly sent a check for $100 to Andy Brickley, thanking him because all those goals that Nifty scored for the Boston Bruins were way better than that goal that Seth Griffin scored yesterday, which just happened to be lucky. Listen, Schneider played it miserably, but who are the two defensemen on that? Bryce Salvador and Marek Zidlitsky?
I think you're really stretching the use of the term defense on that play. I believe Zidlicky was trying to wrap up Griffith like a boa constrictor, while Salvador, I believe, and I have to check the replay because I haven't totally broken down the play yet in a Justin Bourne kind of style. I believe Salvador was taking a selfie. It's quite possible on that play.
It's like he's kind of stopped.
He just stopped. I know.
It was like, okay, you know, and honestly, if this guy were Russian, that I'm going to talk about here in a second, he would be blasted from every single corner. But because he's good Canadian boy, and we all love him, he kind of gets a pass. If you go back and look at that Gustav Nyquist goal from two nights ago, beautiful goal. The guys that he gets around, Valtteri Filppula, Eric, don't call me Carl Brewer, Ryan Callahan, Andre Schuster, and if you look at the back check, watch how straight-legged, he's going to say it, Steven Stamkos was.
No.
Until he gets kind of a chance under the blue line, he just sort of waves his stick at him. Now, I know that's technically not the center's responsibility on that, but as Spider-Man once learned, with great power comes great responsibility. Even if it isn't your job, doesn't mean you can't backcheck hard. And perhaps if that Gustav Nyquist cuts across the right hand to the left side, he's going into your lane. Salvador's effort last night was weird on that one, but heck of a goal. Give it to the kid for having the guts to go up the gut and through those guys. It was a really nice artistic looking goal in some respects. But at the end of it, though, Corey Schneider, would you care to opine on his efforts? I know you've been waiting to bring out both barrels against Schneider here.
No, I'm not. Here's the thing. That was a bad goal on his part. Not helped out by his defense, and that honestly is the theme for his season so far. I broke down the numbers for Schneider. I got a post coming up on Puck Daddy about it.
All right.
Because I wanted to believe that it's not simply a case that they've signed a guy who can't carry the ball. I used to think that it might still be the case. Honestly, you know, he's been given the crease twice, and both times he's given it back to Luongo and he gave it back to Brodeur. So I've had a lingering thought that maybe he's just not cut out to be the workhorse. But
so wait, the Kincaid era is upon us now?
No, it's not. Well, I don't even know what the hell they'll do because they signed Schneider until the sun explodes. So he needs to be the guy.
You
maybe
know who
a hypnotist.
They,
but here's the thing with this season.
You know what? Who they need back. You,
oh,
go on.
F
you,
off.
You just
they
say
don't
it. You just say
no,
it. You just say
no,
it. Go on. Say
no.
it. Say it, Craig. Say it.
They're not going to bring back Brodeur.
Ah, oh, there we go. Like Sam Kinison and back to school. Oh, yeah.
A better chance that, there's a better chance Anthony Brodeur is Corey Schneider's backup. Listen, here's the thing with Schneider for this season that you got to know. He's 6-6-2, a 3 goals against, and a putrid .901 save percentage. And putrid in the sense that he had a .921 last year, 1.97 goals against. Everyone thought, oh, you just take those numbers and extrapolate them over 65 games, and he's going to win the Vezina. Mm-hmm. Two things are happening here that you got to know about. First off, he's never started 14 games in a row in his career. I think the most Ooh. He had was 11. He is clearly exhausted. The idea of him being the starter for the first time for this team without anybody close to overtaking him for that position, plus playing 14 games, plus playing behind a pretty shit-tastic defense, I think has wore him down. And that defense is the real story here. Here's an amazing number. So Schneider's save percentage so far this season overall is .901. Do you know what his even strength save percentage is, Merrick?
What is it? No, I don't. No,
926.
Hmm.
Now, I'm no math major.
That's a mite better.
That would tell me that there's some part of his game that's bringing down his overall save percentage from a 926 at even strength to a 901 overall. Oh, let's see. Oh, here it is. My crack staff of researchers is located at Rip Merrick. It's a 782 save percentage on the penalty kill. 782.
Yeah. Who handles the PK in New Jersey?
You know,
are the goaltenders invited to the meetings?
You know,
because a lot of teams. Obviously, I mean, you want to have your goaltender there because a lot of teams will say, like, depending on how the team is going to play defense in front of the goaltender is going to change up what he does, right? Either he's going to play deep, he's going to play out. I don't know, and again, this is a better question for a friend out west from In Goal Magazine. You know, is he overly aggressive on the penalty kill? Like, if you're a goalie, you can't play PK the same way you play 5-on-5. Like, penalty kill just forces you to become more conservative, because if you're out of a play on the penalty kill, you're out of a play and the puck's behind the net, behind you, and it's
right
in the net. So I don't know. That's
bottom line.
Kevin Woodley for us.
The Devils have given up 17 goals and 78 shots on the PK. They have the worst PK in the league, and this number is again just ghastly. 64% on the kill. Do you know how that is an ungodly bad number for a team that is third right now and time shorthanded. So, yeah. Again, it's you could always seem to pinpoint exactly where these Devil teams fall apart. Last year was a shootout. Now it's the PK. And I don't know what the chicken or the egg argument is with Schneider and the PK. I don't know if it's because he's bad or if the PK is bad. But he's got a 782 save percentage on the PK, and the Devils are killing at a 64% rate. It's terrible. So, listen, he's not a lost cause. He's not a bust. But it's not a good start for him and not a good start for the Devils. And they get the Wild tonight. No Parise for them. Kincaid mm-hmm. gets his first start. So let's see if Schneider gets a little bit of rest in it and can hit the reset button, because he's not been good lately. Not been good at all.
Yeah, I'm still convinced that Corey Schneider is going to be a good goaltender in the NHL, like over the long haul. And
oh, I think he's going to
New
be
Jersey
fine,
hopes.
And he needs to be fine because it's his team now.
Yeah,
it's his team. All right, you got a punt, I got a punt. It's a little bit of a shorter one today. We have a couple of topics still on the table that I guess we'll get to maybe tomorrow or eventually.
Thanks.
One being the AHL 3-on-3 experiment. Myrtle wrote about it yesterday. I wrote about it today. It's working, which is good.
So far.
And then the other thing is Bill Daly basically confirms that the NHL is in talks with Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Vegas to see the arena, to talk to an ownership group, went in depth with Michael Russo. By the way, stick tap to Michael Russo for hooking me and Ruby up with Daly Show tickets last night. We saw Springsteen, Merrick.
Oh,
Springsteen,
come on!
The Daly Show.
Awesome. Now, who went with you?
John Delapina and Frank Brown.
Really, eh? Oh, that's awesome. Oh, fantastic.
So it was the full gambit of emotions. It was two huge, stoic Springsteen fans from the NHL, a professional beat writer, and then the court jester.
Hey, guys, when are we going to Taco Bell?
So that was a lot of fun. But Russo got Daly on the record to talk about a lot of Vegas stuff today, and it was great. He confirmed a lot of stuff that we've all suspected, you know, expansion has to happen in the West before it happens in the East because of the misalignment of teams. And he talked in depth about a couple of the real issues with that market, which is do you have a big enough local fan base to sustain a team there and not rely on tourists, comps from casinos, and everything, mm-hmm. and snowbirds and everybody else? And to me, Merrick, that speaks directly to Arizona and speaks directly to South Florida insofar as when those buildings are full and when they're not. They're full when Canadian teams are in town and snowbirds mm-hmm. are filling them. They're not when those teams aren't. And they don't want Vegas to be like that.
I keep coming back to the same question. I know it's a tourist city, and most people, you know, in the industry that Las Vegas runs on work in the evenings. I don't know. And again, I don't know the marketplace, obviously. But is there enough there to have a significant season ticket holder base to build off of? I think corporate sponsorship will be fine. I think, you know, your casual fans that, to your point, Wish, fly in for the weekend are cool to go, specifically Canadians. I just don't know if you have, like, what's the magic number? 13,000? Like, are there 13,000 people that will buy season tickets in Las Vegas? I don't know the answer to that.
And the other thing real quick that I thought was interesting is that Daly said that there is a possibility that they're going to ask for an exception from the Las Vegas Gaming Commission have Vegas NHL games on the sports books in Vegas, which I think is a really interesting call. UNLV games are not on the sports books in Vegas, and there are other sort of conflict of interest calls they make, like not having Sacramento Kings games available at the Palms because the Maloofs own both. I don't know what the reaction would be, though, from the betting public to not have those games. Like, isn't part of the passion that would be going to those games betting on the games?
Would that be
part of the interest for tourists and snowbirds if you have money on a game that you're attending in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
All right. I got to go.
Back tomorrow, everybody. Ooh, look at multiple. We're working on our own streak here, much like Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh are in the win column. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.